Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Since the Passover of the Jews was near, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. He found in the temple area those who sold oxen, sheep, and doves, as well as the money changers seated there. He made a whip out of cords and drove them all out of the temple area with the sheep and oxen, and spilled the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And to those who sold doves, he said, "Take these out of here and stop making my Father's house a marketplace." His disciples recalled the words of Scripture, "Zeal for your house will consume me." At this, the Jews answered and said to him, "What sign can you show us for doing this?" Jesus answered and said to them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The Jews said, "This temple has been under construction for 46 years, and you will raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking about the temple of his body. Therefore, when he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they came to believe the Scripture and the word Jesus had spoken. While he was in Jerusalem for the Passover, many began to believe in his name when they saw the signs he was doing. But Jesus would not trust himself to them because he knew them all and did not need anyone to testify about human nature. He himself understood it well. The Gospel of the Lord. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is Father Harold Joseph Brock, particularly proud of that second name in the year of St. Joseph and admiring your new stained glass window out there, getting ready for his big feast day. And yes, I'm that guy. Guy you've been seeing in the bulletin, on the monitor outside, Facebook page. I'm the mission preacher here this week. I am a Franciscan friar of the Renewal. We're based in the Bronx. It's nice to hear a different accent out here in the Midwest. I am assigned to St. Michael Friary in Paterson, New Jersey, and I do a lot of preaching in the United States as well as mission activities in Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America. There's some little flyers out in the narthex. If you're interested in learning more, take a little St. Francis holy card. Everybody loves St. Francis even more than Raymond, so please take one. And I'm really glad to be here for the parish mission at St. Louis de Montfort, especially after the Super Bowl. Because when I heard that Tom Brady had a twin brother who was a priest and the pastor of a parish in Colts country, I said, I got to see this. Okay, Father Hans Younger, he's not married to a supermodel, but there are some similarities, okay. So recently, my brother and sister-in-law decided to have their dog neutered. Now, the dog is what's called a large Munsterlander, and his name is Kaiser, which in German means Caesar. He's a hunting dog, and he was the favored breed of the Bavarian nobility. Now, to understand why they chose this breed, I got to tell you a little bit about my background. I'm from a little town in northwest central Pennsylvania called St. Mary's. Originally called Marytown in German, Marienstadt. It was founded by Bavarian immigrants in the 1840s. And it's located in what is now called the Pennsylvania Wilds. A lot of hunting, fishing, four-wheeling, off-roading, and yes, some of my relatives have rednecks. Full disclosure here, my mother's side of the family owns a brewery that was founded by my great-great-grandfather, who was one of the first to come and settle in the town, and my brother runs the brewery. So Kaiser, the Bavarian hunting dog, is kind of part of that whole mystique. But that breed is subject to some health difficulties, and Kaiser, who's now 7, experienced some of them, and neutering him helps to reduce those problems. So they reluctantly agreed because, as expected, unfortunately, after that, he began to put on a little bit of weight, lost some of his spark and verve, and became a little less than a dog. So I mention this because as human beings, we have a tendency to do that, to avoid discomfort. We neuter, emasculate, niceify, cushion, pad, mute, muffle, dilute, cuddle, coddle, smooth off the rough edges of anything that causes us discomfort. And having lived in two different developing countries, Honduras and South Sudan, and visited many others, I can say that as Americans, we are especially prone to this. We have an analgesic culture. Analgesic is a fancy word for a pain reliever. It's a Tylenol culture. It's an Aleve culture. Take a pill for this, take a pill for that. Because, unfortunately for us, sometimes comfort becomes the supreme value. Now, in any number of instances, that's not so bad. But in some cases, it can have devastating effects, especially in the realm of faith. Lukewarmness can be lethal. Many people like a piping hot cup of coffee. Some people like iced coffee. Nobody likes tepid coffee. And when God becomes kind of warm and fuzzy, religion becomes a farce, a charade, and our faith becomes flaccid. It loses its force, it stops impacting us, doesn't guide us, it no longer makes a difference in our lives. And this is exactly what Jesus is reacting to in today's gospel. Worship that has become a kind of game, or worse, a business. It looks like Jesus is messing everything up. And he's literally turning things upside down, cleaning house, kicking. But in fact, he really is cleaning house, his Father's house. The first recorded words of Jesus when he was 12 years old to Mary and Joseph, "Didn't you know that I had to be in my Father's house?" Which is meant to become our home too. And that's why for him, it's personal. He is heartbroken. This sacred place, this place of encounter and communion with his Father has become a kennel, a strip mall, a kind of combination check cashing center and butcher shop, a Forex kosher deli combination. Now, some of you, like Father Han, grew up on farms. So imagine if you return to your family home to find that the living room had become a stable or filled with cow stalls. The dining room was a chicken coop, the kitchen a pigsty, and in the entryway there was an ATM that charged super high fees and interest rates. What would your reaction be? Shock, disbelief, incomprehension, a deep sense of disturbance. This is what's happening to Jesus. It looks like he's turning everything upside down, but that's only because our perspective is off. It's skewed, it's distorted, because he's really putting them back right side up, the way they're supposed to be. Last year, there was an interesting film released by the Hollywood power director, Christopher Nolan, Batman, Inception, Dunkirk, a real Hollywood powerhouse. This film was called Tenet. And the word Tenet is a palindrome. That means you can spell it the same way, forwards and backwards, like radar. And the plot of this mind-bending movie involves the discovery that some articles have become inverted in terms of their time orientation. So instead of moving forward in time, they were moving backward. And it affects the way we perceive their motion. So things move backwards, they fall upwards, cold is hot, hot is cold. And to make it even more mind-bending, there are these turntables that people can go through and then they get inverted. And when they get inverted, everything is moving backwards. Cars, bullets, bombs, boats, instead of exploding, they implode. I mention this because this is kind of what happened to us at the beginning of human history. We got inverted, spun around, messed up, thrown off balance, turned upside down. And that's why Jesus came, to restore them, to put them back right side up, heading in the right direction toward the right goal. Today's gospel was taken from John, the fourth gospel. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called synoptics. It literally means synoptic, to see together, because they recount pretty much the same events of the life of Jesus in more or less the same order. Each one has a different flavor, but they're grouped together. But John is different. John has fewer events. He calls them signs. They're presented in a different order, with greater depth, and often accompanied by discourses explaining their meaning. And while Matthew, Mark, and Luke put the cleansing of the temple near the end of the gospel, at the beginning of Holy Week, John puts it at the beginning, in chapter 2. So you have the prologue, chapter 1, John the Baptist, call of the first disciples, miracle at Cana, and then the cleansing of the temple. It is the first public act of Jesus. And it really symbolizes his whole mission and ministry, which to a messed up world looks like disruption, but it's really restoration. It looks like he's turning things upside down, but he's really putting them right side up. Jesus is not a rabble-rouser. He's not a revolutionary or a reactionary. He's neither a Proud Boy nor a Bernie Bro. He is neither Fa nor Antifa. He is the humble, faithful, loving Son of the Father. He comes from a completely different place. He has an utterly unique approach and perspective that can't be reduced to human categories. We can't squeeze it into the way that we normally think, because Jesus is a singularity. He is in a category all by himself. And St. Paul really zeroes in on that in today's second reading. He says, Jews look for signs, and Greeks want wisdom. But we proclaim this: Christ crucified. And this, he says, is the power of God and the wisdom of God. It's a stumbling block for those who look for signs. It's foolishness for those who look for wisdom. But Christ crucified is the foolishness of God that is wiser than human wisdom, and the power of God that is stronger, or the weakness of God that is stronger than human strength. This is an enigma. This is a paradox. But this is the light that illumines everything for us. What I want to do this week in the parish mission is to unpack that and apply it to our current situation. What does Christ crucified, the power and the wisdom of God, that particular perspective that it gives, that unique mission that it fulfills, that distinctive approach that it embodies, that singular light that it radiates, what does that mean for us? So on Monday, the light of truth. What does it mean in terms of how we look at life, at circumstances, at reality, at ourselves, at others? Tuesday, the light of love. What does Christ crucified mean in terms of how I live my life, in terms of what's primary, the overriding priority? What governs my actions and relationships? How do I respond to the suffering and needs of others? Finally, Wednesday, the light of peace. What does Christ crucified, the power and wisdom of God, mean for how I face conflict, opposition, disagreement, but even more importantly, how do I relate to people who disagree or oppose me? So each morning, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, after the 8 a.m. Mass, or at around 8:30, I'll be giving a conference, and I'll be repeating that same conference in the evening at 7 p.m. At that time, it will be live streamed in the context of Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament. And on Tuesday, there will be a special opportunity for confession and some moments of personal prayer in front of the Eucharist. I'm really hoping to see as many of you as possible this week. Lent is a time that is supercharged with grace. It's in the air. It's like we're swimming in it. It's there for those who want it. grace for conversion, or maybe reversion from the inversion that affects us all. A time for a change of mind, change of heart, a change of direction, to be reoriented in the way that we see, the way that we live, the way that we respond to others, in the light of truth, the light of love, the light of peace, the light of Christ crucified, the power of God and the wisdom of God. It's a time for us to become more and more fully what we became at the moment of our baptism, children of that light.